It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 71st episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, now at comicbook.com. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a very special interview with Jeff Amano, creator of Divine Wind, another one of those wonderful Kickstart books I enjoy so much. I'm always glad when I get to promote their product. He talks about what the book's about and other projects that he's working on too, so I'm sure you'll want to listen to that. Then I review this week's comics, and everything wraps up as usual with Gianluca Glazer joining me for the latest news and previews. As always, there's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Jeff Amano, creator of Divine Wind from Kickstart Comics, and creator of many other good things, including Red Warrior, The Cobbler's Monster, Kiss and Tell, Ronin Hood, and The 47th Samurai, among other good things. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Great, Wayne. Thanks for calling.
Oh, glad to talk with you. I'm a big fan of Kickstart, and so I'm a big fan of your book, too. I got a chance to get a preview read of it, and I really enjoyed it. Very historical and very moving, too. Some people are able to do history and do it well, and I think that this is a great story for people like me who don't know much about this part of the world. Do you want to talk a little bit about Divine Wind?
Divine Wind is actually a story that kids in my era were told from their parents, and it resonated with me because it was like, in many ways, it's like a samurai version of 300, except in this case, the samurai actually won, and they not only won once, they won twice. And before the samurai battled the Mongols were undefeated from Genghis Khan all the way to Kublai Khan. And after the samurai defeat, then they started to lose to other people and began the crumbling of the Mongol Empire.
Interesting. And your book talks a little bit about that critical juncture, so I kind of like that a lot. It's interesting how your story deals with basically everyday people who rise up and become heroes. And I like that a lot about the story. And I'm sure I'm going to butcher the names of some of the folks. But you had the one guy who's the fisherman.
Suichi.
Yeah, he's a really interesting character, and most of the book circles around him and his change from a fisherman into a samurai. Do you want to talk about him? Are all these real characters? Is this a real-life story?
Actually, they're taken from bits and pieces of real stories, real historical data, but even though the main events, the signposts, if you will, of the history are true, a lot of things like the characters and stuff are either fictional or they're taken from other eras. There actually was a great archer called Tommy Tomo, who is kind of like, I guess you could say, Suichi's Yoda. And he actually was a very tall Japanese man. He's known as being tall and lanky, and he carried around a bigger-than-life-size bow. And it was even said that he could sink a boat, not like a great ship, but you know, like a rowboat and stuff like that with his bow and arrow.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And of course, you've got, you know, a variety of characters in there, too. The father of the archer is fun. And you've also got Saichi's father, who's a crazy guy.
Manzo, yeah.
Yeah, he's a funny fella. He adds a little comic relief to what's going on. And so you've got a really wide group of characters in there. And that's one of the things I like about it. You know, some people kind of look at samurai and think that they're all going to be one kind of person. But it's nice to read a story that has such a nice diversity to it.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, at that juncture in time, which is really true, is that people view Japan as the home of the samurai and the place of the samurai, when, in fact, it was a very small percentage of the island itself that were samurai, and then a small percentage of the samurai themselves that were the truly fierce warriors. You know, it's much like the knights in Europe. It wasn't like everybody was a knight, and of all the knights, not everybody was Sir Galahad and Lancelot. So you had those kinds of things. I know I should say, obviously, because this is a podcast, because people might not understand my earlier statement about this being a childhood story, but I am Japanese.
Okay.
Born and raised Japanese. So that's why it was a story that was told to us. Especially because Divine Wind is a translation of the Japanese word kamikaze.
Oh. And
that's what resonated with the, that became the kamikaze pilots later on.
Wow. Okay, wow, that's great. I was going to ask how the phrase Divine Wind came to be the title of the book. And I'm glad you explained that because people will want to know that. There seems to be these days more and more examination of Japanese or Asian or Oriental cultures. For a while, samurais were big and then they kind of faded out and now we're getting back to it. I think we're getting a little more realistic look at it this time around. And I really like that. So I wanted to say how much I really enjoyed the book. Such a great thing. And of course, one of the things I love about Kickstarter is oftentimes these stories have a great conclusion to it. And you have a wonderful ending to things. I really like the way it wrapped up towards the end. And I'm never going to spoil any of that kind of stuff because I think it's important for people to read the book. But I really like the way that it ended as well as the other. The pacing's good. The story moves along real nice and quickly. And like I said, the characters are fun to read about. So it's a really great story. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Well, thanks. I have to give a lot of the credit to Samantha, who is the publisher at Kickstart, because Samantha's really good at story and structure. And Divine Wind actually started off as a script. It was a feature spec script that I wrote, and she loved it. In fact, they're the ones that are producing the feature version of Divine Wind. But she really wanted to see it as a comic book, as a graphic novel, and as well. And so taking that material and truncating it for graphic novel size was pretty difficult because there were things that feels like you're cutting off your right arm.
Yeah,
you're doing it, but she was really great at in her guidance about keeping the pace and keeping the main elements of the story while we were just cutting a lot of material.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also really enjoyed the art. Julian Totino Tedesco, I guess, is the person
that guy's
who did
the pastor.
Yeah, I did a wonderful job on that. And I just thought, you know, sometimes the colors would change. Sometimes it would be much more in a standard comic style, and then other times it wouldn't. So it was always really interesting to keep keeping the eye going and moving in as well as the story did. So I just thought that was a great marriage of story and art. So I just wanted to say that he did a great job on that, too.
He did fantastic. You know, his previous books, he had done the pencils.
Mm-hmm.
And someone else had done the inks and someone else had done the colors, and they did a great job. I mean, he's a fantastic artist and works well with others kind of thing. But on this one, he really wanted to do the whole thing. And we thought, oh, you know, when an artist wants to do, and I know because I've done it, when an artist wants to do the pencils, inks, and the colors, then that's going to be like a deadline buster. But that guy's a workhorse too. He's not only good, he hits his deadlines.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's lovely, too. He's obviously integrated a lot of Japanese culture into the artwork.
Yes, he did, yeah. Even with the brush strokes, you see. Mm-hmm. And the color scheme was based on, in the beginning, you see very stark contrast between the color scheme when you're in China and when you're in Japan. And a lot of that was to help, you know, because we don't have a lot of the filmic techniques to show the transitions. He used it with color to show, okay, now we're in China dealing with the Mongols, now we're in Japan, and then of course, when they clash.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really strong. It's very good to read. The thing I was fascinated, too, is that sometimes when you go back in the past, people kind of consider that, especially kids these days who are used to video games about the future, it's kind of tough for them to get integrated into a story, no matter how good it is, that's based in the past. They kind of think that's old news. But I think if they give this book a chance, I think they'll be pleasantly surprised at how strong it is and what a great read it is. So I really encourage parents to, especially if they want to introduce their children to this culture and to give them some ideas. What this is really all about, as opposed to sometimes the fictionalized version of it. I think they'd really get a big kick out of this book.
Yeah, I think, you know, the lesson for today, that the theme, if you will, of the book and of the script is that don't rely on the past. Don't rely on your bloodline, don't rely on your parents, but as Tommy Tomo says, that a true warrior is born of battle, not of birthright.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the message.
Well, I think younger folks today would probably relate to some of that because they look at themselves as experiencing different things than their parents did. And so that's kind of what this is talking about, is that everybody has to make their own story and has to make their own experience. And like the main character, his father being a fisherman, that doesn't mean that he's going to be a fisherman his whole life as well. So I kind of thought that was a good thing. I think kids can relate to this story real well.
I agree. I think that, in many ways, you make your life what it is. So don't rely on excuses and don't rely on others. Take up the sword yourself and start swinging.
Mm-hmm. Now, this book is $8.99, and recently Kickstarter has upped the size of the books so that they're regular comic size, which I really like. I thought it was worth the $8.99 before when they were smaller, but I think it's even a better deal at this size. And full color, very interesting, like about 96 pages roughly in it. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good buy. I think you get your money's worth out of this comic, so I think it's something special. Now, has this hit the stores?
Let's see. I believe it hit the stores Wednesday.
Okay. So it's just now out. So that's a good thing because this is a good time to start buying. If you're not buying it for yourself, you can buy this as a gift for somebody else for the upcoming holiday season. So there's all kinds of good reasons to that. I would even see this being really helpful in schools. I think that people wanting to study world history, I think this would be a great thing for students basically of all ages to learn about these things and to get familiar with the culture. So I would recommend if somebody's like a school librarian and they want to get kids interested in reading, interested in this culture, this is a great way to get started.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even though it's really in the background and to a minimum, the politics of what occurred is accurate, the timing, all those kinds of things that happened, even down to the sword play and the fighting techniques are all accurate to the way they fought back then.
Very cool. And I know you can get this digitally as well. I see you can buy it on Amazon for the Kindle, and I'm sure you can buy it in other forms too. So if you prefer to get the electronic version, I would say go to Amazon. There's other ways to check. You go to the internet and just say look for Divine Wind. I think you'll find all the avenues in which you can get this. So I would say go for that and give this a good go because it's definitely something worth having.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Now, you've done other things as well. You've done other – do you want to talk about some of the other projects that you've done? Because Red Warrior was a great book, and Ronin Hood and the 47 Samurai. I love that title. I think that's a great title. So you've been involved with other things. Do you want to talk about some of the other stuff that you're doing that people could access?
Sure, yeah. Red Warrior is like a Russian double agent thing that came out in 2006. And is being developed right now as a TV series with News Entertainment and Conflix Productions. Robert Kamen is writing the pilot. People may know him as he's the screenwriter of the original Karate Kid.
Wow.
And he does a lot of the martial arts scripts for Luc Besson. So, I'm looking forward to that. Also, it's something that really hasn't been seen before on screen. It deals with Russian martial arts, particularly the Russian martial arts used by the Spetsnaz, the Russian version of the Navy SEALs.
Wow, that looks interesting. Is that going to be, is that the film?
TV series.
TV series. And is it going to be an American TV yet? Do we know?
That, I don't know where in the process of it, but yeah, it'll be international. Okay. Although I'm not sure if it's going to start in the U.S. It may start. It's a Canadian company that's doing the production. Hmm. So I'm not sure where it's going to start, but it'll be here someday.
Well, Canadian shows are starting to get popular on, like, sci-fi, for example.
Exactly,
they've got, Lost Girl, and they're talking about a Continuum is coming as well. So there are Canadian shows that are coming over into American culture. So I think this is a good time for stories. A good story will really move, so I think that's a great thing. Are there other projects you're working on that you'd like us to know about?
I'm working with a group on another martial arts project that has to do with the burning of the Shaolin Temple. When the birthplace of Kung Fu, and some say martial arts in general. But it's a fictional story based on another graphic novel done by a guy in the UK. And I don't know if I can say too much more about it, but that's going to be a feature film. I also did another martial arts script that's being produced in a joint venture with Brazil and a Hollywood team. That is about capoeira, the Brazilian martial art. I guess you see a theme there, huh?
Yeah. I was going to ask, are you a martial artist yourself? Do you?
Yes, I started when I was 7, actually. So I've been doing martial arts for many decades now.
Mm-hmm. I assume you're black belt then at this point.
Yeah, I've taken several things, but I've done kung fu and judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, those kinds of things.
Great. Now, also, you worked with Mark Guggenheim on, yes, for a webisode for The Nation. Now, of course, Mark Guggenheim, I think he's involved with Arrow these days.
Yeah, which exactly.
So you're in with a good name. He's done many things. He did the Green Lantern movie, if I'm not mistaken, and some other good things as well. What was it like to work with him and to develop a webisode?
He was great. For one thing, the guy is brilliant, but he's great to work with, a real team guy, but obviously he's got a lot of experience and a lot of expertise. And he's been in TV and comics for many, many years. But it was just a great all-around experience. And The Nation is kind of like a American Indian, a Native American mysticism mixed with The X-Files.
Wow. So that's great. Do you have a preference? I mean, you've written comics now, you've written television and film as well. Is there any one medium that you prefer?
Oh, gosh, that's really hard to say. I mean, I love the speed in which you can get a story out by just writing. I found that frustrating when I was drawing. Because you can only do so much, you know. Like I did the entire book of Fade from Grace, and I also did a kung fu book when I started called Daolan. And to do the art in every page and everything, it just takes so much time. And if you're a creator and want a lot of stories, then writing really seemed to suit me that way. So later on, I got into doing the covers, and the publisher was using that because I was doing covers for magazines, mm-hmm, as well. So a lot of times the comics were in the magazines, so they were promoted as the same guy. But that was about the extent of it for years now. I've mainly been doing the scripts and occasionally the cover of the promo material, or I don't know if you've seen from my Facebook page site, but like movie posters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because there's a writer-artist by the name of Phil Hester, and people either want him to write or they want him to draw, but they don't want him to write and draw. And he always gets a laugh about that because he's hoping he's got a project he's actually working on when he gets back to doing that together. And he's real excited about being able to do that. I interviewed him recently, and he was talking about that. But it sounds like you kind of fall now these days into the writing aspect of things.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing mainly. Again, I'll do the... If they ask me to do like concept art, or they want me to do like the poster or the cover or whatever, then I'll gladly do it. But for comics, I think it's better if, for me as a comic fan, I'd rather have the artist who did the inside do the outside as well. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great that Julian did the cover for Divine Wind.
Mm-hmm. Any books that you're reading currently that you might like people to know about?
Well, I'm always a big fan of anything Garth Ennis writes.
Okay.
So I read a bunch of his stuff. I'm a big Hellblazer, mm-hmm, aficionado as well. I've been reading The Unknown Soldier and a lot of the standalone graphic novels and things like that. And, of course, the things by Kickstart. I love Mark Sable's works. I'm sure you've had him on the, mm-hmm, podcast before. Mm-hmm. That guy really cranks out the work, I tell you.
Yeah. One of the things I like about Kickstarter, as I mentioned earlier, was the fact that you have like a complete story. In regular comics, you have to continually keep coming back to the same place, or you've got to put it somewhere where somebody else can pick it up if they need to.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to write Batman, but the trick is with Batman, you've always got to keep him in the same spot. But what the thing you get to do with these books is you get to tell us a total story, so we don't know what's going to happen as a result of it. You know, nothing's really bad's going to happen to Batman or the X-Men or any of those kinds of things, although the X-Men will die occasionally off one of them and then come back. But it's nice to read a story like Divine Wind where we really don't know how things are going to end up, and you get pulled into the story a lot more, I think. And so that's one of the things I'm a big fan of Kickstarter and books like Divine Wind.
You know, in a way, it's like the difference between feature films and a TV series. Mm-hmm. You know, and some things are better suited as an ongoing series. And, like, you know, I love, I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan and a Dexter fan. Mm-hmm. And I love that they're a series. Mm-hmm. Maybe they wouldn't work as a film, feature film. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the tough thing about a serialized comic book is that, unlike TV, people get to see it every week. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helps build the audience. The tough thing is you get, like, you know, anywhere between 22 to 24 pages of story in a 32-page book, but it's every month. It's like getting a book and reading a chapter a month. Mm-hmm. And that's hard in today's world, I think. So, you know, the patience factor is much, much, much smaller. And so what's nice about the graphic novel format is, bam, you have the whole story, beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Do you have any other comic projects that you're working on that we could look forward to?
Not right now. No, I don't.
Not right now. Okay. Okay. Well, Divine Wind is good enough to keep us going for quite a long time, I'm sure. So, Jeff, it was good talking with you today, and I hope Divine Wind sells really well, and we get to see the movie version of this eventually.
That would be fun. Maybe be they'll let me be one of the guys that gets an arrow in his head or something.
So you'd like to be in your own story as well?
Yeah, but more like just the cameo to get an arrow stuck in my forehead or something and fall over and die. But
okay. Well, Jeff, much success to you, and look forward to Divine Wind. And I highly recommend it for anybody who hasn't picked it up. Put this on your list, and if you have a list that you want people to get for you, add this one to that list as well. So good talking with you today, Jeff.
Oh, thanks, Wayne.
You are listening to the Batfans podcast, brought to you by the BatmanUniverse.net. Enjoy the show.
Who do you think would win in a fight? Greg Capullo? And you know, he has muscles.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know.
He's like a big guy. Yeah. Or J.H. Williams III.
I'm going to go with Greg Capullo.
But why?
First of all, because I've seen pictures of Greg Capullo, how ripped he looks, and... J.H. Williams, I don't think I've seen a picture of him, so I don't know.
Yeah, but J.H. Williams is kind of like a bigger guy. You know, he's a big guy.
Okay.
And he has a beard, so that makes him all cooler.
Well, Greg Capullo has that mustache. Sometimes a goatee.
Oh, that's right, he has a fat mustache.
It's like he could be a wrestler or something.
Yeah, I know. Out of principle, I have to pick J.H. Williams. And he has a beard.
Together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review,
dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
And let's have a look at this week's comics. Now that the Zero books are finished from DC's New 52, we're back to quote-unquote the regular issues. And being a big Batman fan, I was more than a little curious about how the new creative team on Detective Comics would do. So that's the book I want to focus on this week. Here's the book's description from DCComics.com. All kneel before Emperor Penguin. There's a hit out on Bruce Wayne. This new story from writer John Layman Chu guest stars Nightwing. I was sorry to hear that Tony Daniel was leaving Detective behind for other projects. After all, he created what I think was the most talked about final page in the New 52 event, containing the skin from the Joker's face hanging on a wall. People still refer to that. And I was concerned when I heard that the writer from Image's Chu was taking over. Mr. Layman started one of the most unique comics on the stands today, but I feel it's lost a lot of its special nature in the last couple of years. What would this guy do with The Dark Knight? Turns out he's building on what Greg Hurwitz has done with the Penguin in that excellent miniseries, Penguin, Pain, and Prejudice. What a good idea. Oswald Cobblepot is every bit the nasty that he has been recently, but he's decided that he's not content to be a major figure in Gotham's criminal world. Now he wants to be a major player in legitimate areas of the city as well. And the best way to accomplish that is to outdo Bruce Wayne. There's a wonderful portion of the book where Penguin decides he wants to keep Batman from interfering with his plans to take Mr. Wayne down from his high perch, so he plots crimes to keep the Dark Knight occupied. But Oswald can't figure out what's keeping Bruce Wayne from showing up at a big dedicatory ceremony. Interesting twist there that I really enjoyed. Jason Fabok's art is a good fit with the other artists now inhabiting the Bat family of books, so I liked it a lot. I'll miss Mr. Daniels' work on Detective, but this new team has exceeded my already high expectations. I love that Batman just keeps soaring higher and higher, so don't miss this great debut for the new team. Also, Mr. Daniels' Joker is going to be followed up by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo in the Batman book, so be sure to get those as well. This week's new 52 reviews starts off with Earth 2, which continues to be a great surprise of a comic, so don't miss it. Issue number 5 comes out this week. Action Comics 13 has an excellent Grant Morrison story bringing back to Superman a long-loved character from the hero's mythology. I won't say who. Swamp Thing and Animal Man each continue the Rot World story, but from the perspective of each main character and their unique takes on what's happened. Green Lantern number 13 continues to explore the new Green Lantern. World's Finest is another great outing from Paul Levitz, this time with artists George Perez, Jerry Ordway, and Wes Craig. Batwing number 13 has the hero combating Father Lost. Stormwatch brings the demon from Demon Knights into the mix. This month's Green Arrow concludes his battle in China. GI Combat stars the Honda Tank and the Unknown Soldier. And also, the new Dial H continues its odd ways. What a weird book that is. Very interesting team up in that book. Good reading all. Out this week of note also are Before Watchmen, Rorschach number 2, Legends of the Dark Knight number 1 based on the digital series at dccomics.com, Smallville season 11 number 6, and Sweet Tooth number 38 from Jeff Lemire from DC. Garfield number 6, Hypernaturals number 4, and Planet of the Apes Cataclysm number 2 came from Boom Studios. Doctor Who volume 3 number 1 from IDW. Avengers Academy number 38, Road to Oz number 2, and Avengers vs. X-Men number 12, which finally wraps up, from Marvel. Fatale number 8, Guarding the Globe number 2, and Thief of Thieves number 8 from Image, as well as Bionic Woman number 5 and Warlord of Mars Deja Thoris number 16 from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. No. It's not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, breathing, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit, and opinions.
He likes it. Hey, Mikey.
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson,
J. David Weider,
and
Michael Kaiser
take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
It's time again for news and previews, and with me as always is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
I'm doing all right.
Good, good. What news have you got for us this week?
All right. Well, October previews is out promoting December titles, and there's some interesting stuff in the mix. Mm-hmm. Dark Horse has Hellboy and Hell, number one, with Mike Mignola returning to draw the ongoing story for the first time since Conqueror Worms. It's interesting. DC Comics is debuting Arrow, number one and number two, mm-hmm. in the same month. They're kind of taking a page out of Marvel's book. But yeah, based on the new CW TV series, and it's going to have Mark Guggenheim and Andrew Kreisberg, the producers and the writers of it.
Good.
DC also, through Vertigo, has Django Unchained, also number one and two, and this is based off of Quentin Tarantino's upcoming film. On IDW side, they're doing a new Crow miniseries, Skinning the Wolves. So, this one, though, has James O'Barr returning as the writer. Image Comics has a couple of new titles as well. Brian Wood, the guy who did DMZ and Northlanders, is writing a new series called Mara. Mm-hmm. And it's got Ming Doyle as the artist. The story of a specially gifted woman in a sports war-obsessed future. And they also have Hip Flask Arborus. So,
okay.
You know, Richard Starkings. So it's I think it's not the first Hip Flask. Hip Flask has been out before, so it's a new Hip Flask series.
Okay.
Marvel's got The Amazing Spider-Man number 700. We talked a little bit about that last week.
Yeah.
And it's the final issue. Mm-hmm. Oh, get it. Mm-hmm. Avatar has a new Caligula miniseries, Heart of Rome. Mm-hmm. It's going to be especially gory. Mm-hmm. David Lapham is returning to write this one. He did the last one as well, too.
Mm.
So is artist German Noble. He was the artist for the original series. More bloody fun from Avatar. Boom has a new series coming out. It's kind of like superhero Hunger Games kind of thing. It's called Deathmatch.
Okay.
Paul Jenkins is a writer for that. But the description is, a powerful, mysterious supervillain has imprisoned the world's greatest superheroes, forcing them to fight to the death until there's but one victor. It's kill or be killed as we settle the score on all these hypothetical superhero matchups in the ultimate death match. Written by industry legend Paul Jenkins and drawn by comics superstar Carlos Mengo, the guy who's done Planet of the Apes as well as Transformers. Deathmatch is a dark psychological deconstruction of the superhero genre that can't be missed.
Oh, wow.
What do you think about that?
I think that's interesting. Boom's got to replace some of the stuff that they've lost recently. So that's just a title. I guess we don't know which heroes are in there. These are all new heroes, I would imagine.
All going to be newly created people because obviously they don't have the rights to like all of our well-known characters.
Mm-hmm.
But they are doing some interesting things with that. They have like a special package if retailers order enough that's going to have kind of a you know, posters that go to the store, posters that go out to retailers, I mean to fans, but, you know, they also have like a, I guess a chart, you know, like a battle chart where people can place their bets on who's going to, you know, survive. And you know, it's kind of an interesting concept there. I just wonder if there is going to be interest for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out.
Yeah. And Dynamite is bringing back a new Sherlock Holmes series, Liverpool Demon. Alan Moore's daughter, Leah Moore, and John Repion are going to be writing that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing what he's doing best, solving a case of far-reaching international notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
Landed him in the port of Liverpool, a bustling hub of commerce, both legitimate and illicit. As the chapter closes, ours begin. They head to a Lime Street station to catch a fast steam locomotive home to London in Baker Street when violent weather keeps the great detective and Watson in Britain's second city a while longer. Long enough to encounter a monster, discover the Liverpool underworld, and become embroiled in one of the strangest cases yet. Interesting stuff there.
And Sherlock Holmes is popular these days. CBS just debuted a show called Elementary, and, you know, you've got Sherlock over in the UK.
Yeah.
So Mr. Holmes is getting his thing. Before you leave Dynamite, I do want to mention one other thing that fascinates me.
Yeah.
There's a book called Masks that's coming out.
Yes.
And what it has is it has – that's why I was asking about if they were known characters, because there's a group of known characters in Masks. There's Green Hornet, the Spider – a whole bunch of other things, and the interiors are going to be done by Alex Ross, which I find interesting. So I'm going to have to be after that book.
Yeah, I'm really after it too. It's a lot of the pulp heroes of the day, like the Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned the Spider.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're taking kind of the licenses that they have already and creating, like, you know, this super story from it.
Mm-hmm. So, looks interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I agree. Yeah, that's it for previews for me. I have some regular news, unless you want to touch upon a previews book.
No, you've hit most of the highlights. There's some smaller stuff, but I'd rather get to the news. So, well, what news is there?
So, news. All right. Rob Liefeld, stay classy, my friend.
Oh, boy.
You know, Twitter is a great tool. It allows creators to talk with fans and interact and promote their stuff. And, you know, Twitter also has a downside to it where you could just be an ass and broadcast it to the world.
As Mr. Liefeld shows very well.
Yes. Well, Brian Smith, the editor at DC, and he was also the creator of Stuff of Legends, he tweeted, "Last day at DC this Friday. Good times. Learned a lot, good and bad. Back to freelance and creator-owned comics for me." Well, Mr. Liefeld reacted with a tweet of his own.
Oh, joy.
With a hashtag. "So I walked out of DC due to my editor's incompetence. Now he's gone. Hashtag funny."
Oh, boy. He doesn't want to ever work for DC ever again, does he?
No, he doesn't want to ever be liked again.
Grief.
But the joke's on Liefeld, because actually Brian Smith didn't get fired. He voluntarily left because Stuff of Legend, I think, is being picked up by Disney, which owns Marvel, and it's a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Smith's getting a movie made out of his own creator-owned work, and I doubt he's very, you know, upset. He's also got something else in the pipeline coming out soon as well, too.
Cool.
So, yes.
Very cool.
Arrow Day. Wednesday, October 10th will be Arrow Day in comic stores to tie in to the debut of CW's new Arrow TV series.
Mm-hmm.
In-store giveaways at participating retailers will include a free Arrow No. 1 special edition comic book, a companion piece to the show's premiere that night, Arrow promotional bags and posters as well. Retailers will receive as many copies of the special edition as they ordered of Justice League No. 0.
Wow.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
As mentioned before, you know, it's written by the show's executive producers, Mark Guggenheim and Andrew Kreisberg. So, good stuff.
Well, you know, the commercials and the ads they show in the comics and stuff. He's a member of that club I like to call the I Forgot My Shirt Club, and we need to get a fund ready to get so he can buy a shirt and not have to run around with his bare chest hanging out all the time.
You know who doesn't have any problems funding for a shirt?
Who?
Mark Millar, or some people like to call him Mark Miller.
As he likes to call himself.
That's what he does. But he doesn't ever have to worry about needing to afford a shirt ever again.
No, that's true.
Because Fox just threw a lot of cash his way.
Mm-hmm.
20th Century Fox has signed Mark Miller, R, as creative consultant on its Marvel movies, the company announced. Fox currently has 3 Marvel movies in the pipeline. Wolverine, which will premiere in July 2013. X-Men Days of Future Past, out July 2014. And a new Fantastic Four, currently unscheduled. So, maybe with all this money, he can fix his name.
You know, what's funny to me is that, you know, Marvel's kind of been hoping that Fox would let the licenses go. And I understand Marvel's quite unhappy when they discovered that they put Miller on this thing because it indicates that they intend to keep going with these things. So Marvel's, they were really hoping they would get these licenses back, but now it looks like they won't for some time to come.
That's right. They're building their case of keeping the properties in action.
Yeah, yeah. And Miller, of course, did Kick-Ass, which did reasonably well. And there's a second one that's coming out. So he's used to the movie format. So that'll help them as far as making things doable and profitable.
Right.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It will. Maybe with all this money, he can make Clint into a good magazine.
Okay, make Nemesis interesting. He's got interesting stuff. His books always kind of make me look at him and go, "What? What did he do? Oh man,
yeah.
He likes to do different stuff just for different stuff's sake." So we'll see.
Well, you know, some people out there like Judge Dredd.
Yeah,
cult figure. It's been around quite a long time,
mm-hmm.
But obviously moviegoers didn't because
the
movie bombed. It in its debut week, it debuted at number 6 with $6.3 million.
Death.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, Judge Death.
Yes, the prior version, the one that Stallone was in, 1995, earned $35.7 million during its entire run at the time. It was considered a bomb, but this new Judge Dredd would be lucky to even make that amount of money.
That's interesting, because I've read so many positive reviews of it. People said it was very like the book, but you know, you got to trouble when you make something like a comic, in that the people who read the comic are like, it might go, but you might not get other people.
Well,
I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Americans just really don't know about Judge Dredd, to be honest, mainstream, you know? Mm-hmm. We've grown up with the Superman and Batman, and we know a lot of characters, but Judge Dredd is really British.
Yeah. You have to understand 2000 AD in order to get that character. And so you're right. They started selling that magazine over here again.
Yeah.
But I think people still think, what's his name? Stallone, when they think Judge Dredd after that horrible movie he did.
Yeah. That couldn't have helped either, you know.
No. I'm sorry to hear that. I can't believe it. I was actually thinking about going to see that movie. I guess I better go fast if I'm going to.
Yeah, you better run. a couple of Robert Kirkman news items here.
Mm-hmm.
AMC has confirmed that there's going to be a Walking Dead season 4.
Oh.
JoeBlow.com caught a posting on the Red Cross blog, which states that AMC and the Walking Dead are joining forces for the American Red Cross for a nationwide blood drive. Aside from a great way to show your humanity, you may win a 3-day, 2-night trip to the season 4 production of The Walking Dead, 2013.
Wow, because season 3 hasn't even debuted yet.
That's right. But announcement from the Red Cross kind of confirms there's already a season 4 in production.
Yeah.
Well, one of AMC's highest rated shows. So
Of course.
The highest rated show on the AMC. So.
Yeah.
That's right. And the other piece of Kirkman news, Kirkman and Tony Moore have settled their lawsuits.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's nice that the season will be able to start up without that hanging over its head. You know, the interesting thing about it was that they kind of sniped at each other for quite a while. And then at San Diego, Mr. Kirkman came out and said they were working behind the scenes to resolve it. And, you know, they don't say what happened. It was a joint release for the two. You know, we don't know how much money got sent around, but somebody got their palm greased. So we'll see what happens.
A lot of money thrown his way.
Yeah, I'm sure Mr. Moore will be happier, and you never know, you might get to see him draw some other stuff in the future, but I would say that,
There's some nasty words thrown Robert Kirkman's way.
Oh, yeah. He was something liar, some kind of a liar.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes me interested is that, you know, these things all mean pay me. When somebody files a lawsuit, that usually means I want money, and that's, I'm sure, what happened.
Yep. And last bit of news, Image Comics has Nowhere Man number 1 coming out November 21st.
Mm.
It's written by Image publisher Eric Stevenson,
mm-hmm.
and art is by Nate Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere Man is an ongoing series that figures out a futuristic world in which scientists are akin to rock stars in mm-hmm. terms of both cultural impact and popularity.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting concept there.
Interesting, yeah. There was a TV show called Nowhere Man back on UPN when it first started out, which I really loved.
This is Nowhere Men. Okay,
well, that's not the same thing then, for sure.
Nope, that's it for the news. Do you have any news items?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things, and I got a spoilerific one I want to talk about. As we get to the new comics going to be out this week, very shortly, Batman 13 is coming out, and that's the beginning of the Death of the Family storyline, the return of the Joker. And on Newsarama, there was recently an interview or an article which they talked about some of the things that are going to happen in the Joker, and it's quite haunting, some of the things that are going to happen. It looks like the Joker's going to have a secret identity.
Hmm.
He's going to actually wear the skin that was removed from his face back in Detective Number 1 like a mask to protect his identity. Interesting thing is that he has to use like clips and hooks and stuff to keep it on his face. And since it's his skin that's starting to rot, you're going to see like flies and bugs go all over it some of the times. So, you know, this is going to be, good heavens, this is going to be something else. There's also going to be resolution to some of the storylines that have been going on with the Joker. Barbara Gordon's going to face the Joker again. Gail Simone isn't using the word resolved, but there's going to be a confrontation. We're going to find out how that ends itself in some ways. That'll be kind of interesting to see. He's also going to face the Red Hood, which is Jason Todd, who he killed.
Sure. In the Death of a Family.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's going to be in Red Hood and the Outlaws, so we'll be seeing that. But he's going to be after Catwoman, he's going to be after the Penguin, and there's going to be all kinds of little things going on. So it's going to be a great little book, or a great little story. Oh, God, it's just going to be wonderful. It's going to harken back to a lot of the things the Joker's done in the past, so it's going to be great. I just love that idea that he's actually going to wear his skin like a mask, and they say what's going to happen is sometimes when he moves his head, the thing doesn't hold on straight, so you're going to see little bits of what he's like underneath it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just going to be creepy. Leave it to Mr. Snyder.
Yes.
And Mr. Capullo. I understand Mr. Capullo had a lot to do with that as well, so it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Another news item is that if you didn't like Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight movies, there's something you can see that is much lighter in tone and something you might prefer. There's something called the Batman Live Stage Show.
Oh.
And it's very much of the original comic booky kind of thing, much less dark, much more punching and kicking, and much more superheroic type action, which Mr. Nolan was not known for. So that's going to happen. As far as Spider-Man 2, we've gotten confirmation as to Mark Webb, the director, is returning, and so is Andrew Garfield. Of course, that was a no-brainer on the second Spider-Man movie. I don't know if they're going to call it Amazing Spider-Man 2 or Spider-Man 2 or what they're going to do with it, but that'll be interesting to see. So that'll be a good thing. We talked about Nick Spencer last week, and I'm always fascinated to see what he's going to be doing. Sure. There's a creator-owned book that he's doing called Bedlam.
Right.
And it's about a serial killer, and he's going to be doing that. Well, Image Comics is producing that, so that'll be something.
Yeah.
Mr. Spencer does a lot of stuff for Image, so that's not a big surprise. Oh, there's an interesting story about a disabled artist who's creating comics by drawing using his mouth.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say feet. You know?
No, he uses his mouth. I think this is the guy that I saw at Baltimore Comic Con. There was a guy drawing, and he was in a wheelchair, and he held the drawing implement in his mouth and drew with it.
Wow.
And it's interesting to see. It's called Dark Zoe. It's a black and white horror comedy, and it isn't one of Kickstarter's splashier things, but it has to do with Lareem Taylor from San Jacinto, I know I can't pronounce this right, Jacinto, California. He was born with a congenital disorder that profoundly affects the muscles and joints, and he's in a wheelchair, but he uses his mouth to draw these things. And the art's actually quite good. It's pretty interesting. If you go to Newsarama and look under Disabled Artist Rights Draws and Letters Comics by Mouth, you know, that's amazing that he can do that all himself. Most people can't do
that. That's very difficult.
You know, and a lot of people don't even do half of that stuff, and he's doing it all himself. So that's going to come. It's in Kickstarter. If you go to Kickstarter.com, you can look that up. I just think that's a fascinating thing. I'm going to be interested to see how that comes out, because you might have a very different perspective on things.
Sure.
So I find that interesting. Anyway, that's the news that I have. Okay, how about the books for October the 10th?
That's right, October the 10th. Dark Horse has Creep number 2 on sale. The character is based off of horror movie, cult figure, Rondo Hatton.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff. DC Comics has Batgirl number 13, Batman number 13, which you were talking about before,
right. The
storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Odyssey hardcover. I think that's the Neil Adams one, right?
You are correct.
Yes. It's a mess. For $30, you can have it in hardcover.
If you love the art, it would be worth it, but the story, not so much.
Yeah. We have Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan number 2, Frankenstein, Agent of Shade number 13. You may want to pick it up, because who knows how long it's going to last now.
Well, you know, the sales seem to be okay with it. I've been watching the numbers. They dipped, but not terribly badly.
Well, I know the artist for it is leaving for another series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jeff Lemire's already gone over to Justice League Dark, so.
Yeah, now the artist is changing, so it's not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Jeff Lemire, this is before Jeff Lemire, actually, but the Justice League Dark Volume 1 trade paperback goes on sale.
Mm-hmm.
This one had Peter Milligan as the writer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see all of Milligan's work before Jeff Lemire joined Justice League Dark.
Mm-hmm.
On Image Comics, there is the Blue Estate Trade Paperback Volume 3.
Yay.
The final chapter section there of the Blue Estate story.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like Pulp Fiction in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. Yeah. Your guy, Jimmy Palmiotti, Creator-Owned Heroes number 5 goes on sale.
Yeah. And you arranged that interview for last time, which went over big time, by the way. So thanks for that. I really appreciate your help with that. Okay. And Mr. Palmiotti, he gets around. I tell you, he's got a lot of fans and a lot of good stuff coming out.
Very busy guy. Very busy.
Yeah.
And then Saga Trade Paperback Volume 1 goes on sale, too. It's only $10, and it's a really good series.
Mm-hmm.
Brian K. Vaughan there.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that I have of interest. Wayne, tell me what catches your eye for October.
Okay, I've got several that are going on. This, of course, is going to be the beginning of the post-Avengers versus X-Men era. So we're going to have a plus X poster coming out from Ed McGuinness.
Mm-hmm.
And AVX Consequences, 1 of 5. We didn't get enough of those books.
Yeah.
So that'll be coming out. There's going to be there's a Castle hardcover, Storm Season, it's called, from Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
There is Fear Itself, Avengers Academy trade, which I like to promote that book anywhere I find it, because it's a good book. Then as far as other things go, the Secret Service, Mr. Millar, as we like to call him, Mr. Miller, his number 4 of 6 is out that week. So that'll be something to keep an eye out for.
Okay.
Up to Image, we've got one of my favorite books, Hoax Hunters, number 4 from Michael Morrissey, which I really like. And speaking of Mr. Spencer, Morning Glories, number 22 is out as well. Speaking of Robert Kirkman, there's a Michonne special out that week for $2.99. I have a feeling that's going to try to prepare people for the third season of Walking Dead,
because mm-hmm.
that's good stuff. And then we get to Jericho Season 4, number 2 of 5. I always like that. It's a continuation of the semi-popular CBS show.
Yeah.
Now, talking about Mr. Palmiotti, he's also got Amy Comey Girls number 1 featuring Wonder Woman. Amanda Connor is squeezed, does the regular cover, and then Dustin DeGuillen does the variant cover. He's actually doing those. Those are digital first, and then they go into the paper copies.
Hmm.
So that'll be kind of fun. And Batman, I did want to mention on Batman, there's a Greg Capullo black and white variant cover. That should be interesting. I'm kind of going to be looking forward to that because I like his art.
Yeah.
I never was a big fan of his until he hit Batman, and now, wow, I'm just a huge fan of
his
stuff.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
Great. Batman and Robin, number 13.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Arkham Unhinged, number 7. Then there is Deathstroke, 13, Demon Knights, the Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern, the animated series based on the show, which recently started up new episodes on Cartoon Network. Then we've got Legends of the Dark Knight, Alan Davis hardcover, which is $40. So you better really like Alan Davis if you like that. You've also got Legion Lost, the first trade of Nightwing, which is going to have a lot to do with that Joker series. Two issues, 15 and 16, have to do with the Joker in there. So that'll be interesting to see. It's called Traps and Trapezes, which I think is a clever name. Then we got Phantom Stranger number 1, written by Dan DiDio, Suicide Squad, Superboy, and Team 7 number 1.
Yeah.
And I think that's all the books that's out that week. Well, you know, I should mention, too, for those people who like it, Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 9, number 14, is coming out that week as well. So all good things. So anything else before we should call it quits?
I'm tapped out.
Okay. And on that note, we call an end to this week's news and previews. We'll be back next week to talk more, and we'll talk with you then, Gianluca.
All right. Thanks very much, Wayne.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast here at comicbook.com. You'll want to be here next week when I air my interview with Chuck Dixon, legendary comics writer and creator. We had a great time talking about his projects past and present, so I'm sure you'll want to listen. But until then, keep reading your comics.